and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. Today on the show, I have Andrew Bruce, president and CEO of Data Gumbo. Data Gumbo is a blockchain as a service company that has specialized in the oil and gas industry until recently, as Andrew has expanded to the construction biz. He's had to raise a lot of money and educate his industry on the technology that is blockchain. Now, Data Gumbo prepares for a massive expansion from new offices to new applications. Andrew and I will also discuss the Houston innovation ecosystem and the role it's played in Data Gumbo's success. Thank you, Andrew, for coming on the show today. So tell me a little bit about Data Gumbo's origin story. I know it is a very interesting story because you went from oil downturn, being laid off, to starting this company, which I'm sure it was no easy ride. So tell me a little bit about your background and kind of how you got to that point in your career and then what sparked Data Gumbo.
Okay, well, first of all, thanks for having me. It's been quite a journey. So my background originally was computer science, started a couple of companies and ended up working for National Oil Varco, putting together a control system for autonomously drilling wells. We were using some algorithms from Draper Labs for the space program. And Draper Labs does a lot of autonomous vehicles and all kinds of interesting things like stick insects and bugs and tuna that swim up rivers. And one of them was a autonomous landing of a spacecraft. So I saw that, and I saw the ability to autonomously drill a well. So we took those algorithms, we used them to start building an autonomous drilling rig. The issue we ran into is that to be able to autonomously drill a well, you need data from lots of different sources, from companies that don't like each other very much, like companies like Schlumberger, Halliburton, divisions of our own company. And we were involved in a lot of industry associations like SPE, the Society of Petroleum Engineers, and IEDC, which is the International Association of Drilling Contractors. Mm-hmm. And the general conclusion was that the industry needed two things to be able to drive automation forward within the industry. Number one was needed an integrator, and number two was we need to be able to challenge the commercial model for the industry. So Data Gumbo was actually set up to solve one and ended up solving both. Mm-hmm. So after Pete Miller, who was the CEO, left, I didn't agree with some of the management changes were made, so I went and worked for the competition. And as you said, supposedly to grow it to compete with NOV, but downturn happened, laid off 60% of the staff, including myself, and started Data Gumbo. So Data Gumbo was originally started to solve that integration problem. So take data from lots of different sources, standardize it, clean it up, make sure that only the people who have authority to get access to the data can get access to that data. That's why we call Data Gumbo. Mm-hmm. You take a bunch of data, put it in a pot, stir it up, make it taste good, you get Data Gumbo. That's where the name came from, in case you're wondering where that came from. It's not the funny accent. So we built the product, and we still use it today. But it's difficult to sell, especially in a down market. And we were talking to a large multinational company about benchmarking performance of rigs in the Gulf of Mexico. And they said during one of these discussions that if they could save a minute per drill pipe connection, that they could save $250 million a year. Wow. So if you're drilling a well, you have to connect lots of pieces of pipe together, connect them, disconnect them, connect them again. So if you do that across a global fleet, that's a lot of pieces of pipe to connect. And the average time is about 6 minutes. So if you can reduce that to 5 minutes, and you take the spread rate of a rig, which an offshore rig could be $600,000 a day. Well, back then it could be. Mm-hmm. You can see how the minutes can add up. So I asked them, I just come from a company that specialized in automating this kind of stuff. So I asked them, why on earth aren't you solving the problem? Because that's an easy problem to solve. And they said that they couldn't get the drilling contractors to work with them as a generalization. So I went over and spoke to one of the drilling contractors and said, you know that I know how to reduce this minute. Mm-hmm. So why aren't you doing it? Because this company is prepared to share this $250 million with you 50-50. So why aren't you doing it? And they said, well, we would love to because then we could go and upgrade our fleet. We can go and get authorization for capital expenditure from the board of directors, we would love to do it, but we don't trust that the oil companies as a generalization will ever pay the bonus portion of the contract. Mm-hmm. They will always find a reason not to. So what they're going to do is they're going to use the negotiation and the promise of a performance contract to get our day rate down with the promise of paying a bonus, but then they'll always find a reason not to pay the bonus. So I had done some research for Microsoft a few years before on Bitcoin and blockchain and cryptocurrencies and all that rubbish, and had come to exactly that conclusion. It was a bunch of rubbish that had got no applicability at all for what we do on a daily basis. So, but I started thinking about it, and I said, you know what, if a smart contract for a blockchain is just a computer algorithm. So if the connection time is better by 1 minute, pay a bonus of $22,500. And if it's worse, then pay an equivalent penalty or incur an equivalent penalty. And in order to be able to measure a drill pipe connection, you need seven pieces of data off a rig. And we had a data platform that could be used to get access to that data. See, it's not a big data problem. It's a specific data problem. You're looking for specific data for a specific contract. And then you could provide a distributed ledger for each of the different participants, and you could provide an irrefutable record of what the source data, the contract, and exactly what had happened. And so therefore, you could use it to automate the payment. You don't have any disputes. You don't have any legal fees. You just say, did this happen? Yes, it did. The payment based on the algorithm is X. Therefore, make that payment reflected in an ERP system, and you're done. You've just automated a transaction. So fast forward a couple of months, that I was at a conference presenting this technique for automating performance contracts. I mean, the industry has been trying to do performance contracts for years, but they're expensive to administer. You need a lot of people, and inevitably everybody argues with each other. So I was presenting it at a conference, and they came up to me afterwards and said, you know, if you can automate a performance contract, then you can automate any contract. So was sand delivered? Yes or no? What's the price? X. Okay, X times the amount of sand is, you know, the fee. And so that's the day we became a blockchain company, because now we're solving an interesting problem. If we can automate transactions between industrial customers, which we can, based using field data to verify the terms of the contract, now you've solved a massive problem for industry. So we got into the blockchain business, and now we are, you know, that's what we do.
So at this point, kind of right at the beginning, you're finding out what each party needs. So who were the clients that y'all were targeting, and how did that pan out to how you later operated?
That's a great question. So, yeah, we thought about that a lot. You know, how do you get into the market? Because the drilling contractors are potentially the ones who win because they get paid quicker. So they were the natural ones that we would go after, but the VARCO, so National Oil VARCO, the VARCO part of that, they were trying to sell top drives a few years ago, and they couldn't sell it to the drilling contractors because it enabled the drilling contractors to drill quicker, which they didn't necessarily want to do. So they ended up selling it to the oil companies, and the oil companies adopted it and then started writing it into their contracts. The drilling contractors had to have a top drive to be able to rent a rig. So we took the same approach and said, okay, If there's a benefit to the oil company, which there is, because they can get more visibility into their spend, they can reduce the fraud, and they can manage their spend much better, then if we can work with the oil companies, then we'll get access to drilling contractors as well and the service companies. So we targeted the oil companies, and as luck would have it, I don't know if it's luck or what it was, but the oil companies themselves were coming up with their own consortium. So if you go to oocblockchain.com, there's a consortium of 10 oil companies chaired by Equinor and ConocoPhillips. But it's other companies like Exxon, Chevron, Shell, Pioneer, Repsol, Marathon, Hess. After that, my memory runs dry. But they were looking at use cases for blockchain themselves. So they came up with four use cases, and so we were able to partner with them. So we've been kind of working very closely together over the last 12 months on exactly, you know, what is blockchain, how is it used, how is it useful for oil companies, and then using that as a way to market through to the rest of the supply chain.
Yeah, that is fortuitous timing, because I know even just other technology, I've heard startups and entrepreneurs, you know, take issue with the slow adoption process of oil and gas companies, but also just that sometimes they don't necessarily understand the technology. And I know blockchain is one of those technologies that kind of brings forward a big question mark for some people. So how was that kind of education process that you had to kind of go through with the industry?
To start with, it was horrendous. Mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, we couldn't get a meeting. And if we got a meeting, then it was, you know, people would throw completely crazy ideas, crazy ideas of what a use of a blockchain was. Because, I mean, to be fair, nobody really understood what blockchain was and if it had any use in industry at all. I mean, it was a big question mark. So a huge amount of kicking tires, exploring. I mean, everybody was kind of throwing everything at the wall to see what would stick and what made sense. I mean, us included, because we were all trying to figure it out. But then, like I said, the consortium guys were trying. They were talking about it, and we were talking about it, and it all started to gel into people's heads that yes, actually, there is exactly how I described it. I mean, if you can use IoT data to inform the terms of the execution of the contract, then you actually have got a perfect use case to solve the mistrust issue within the industry. So that once you understand that, solving the mistrust piece of it, then you start to pull on the thread that has got tendrils everywhere within the industry. So it still is an education process. But now it is much more of a, okay, now that we understand, you know, how a smart contract works and the application of the smart contract, then how do you write, if going forward, how should companies write contracts that are easier to enforce using a smart contract? Because so the best practices are starting to come out, understanding, you know, the interaction between the different companies, how they can work together. So the learning is moving extremely fast at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like you're kind of pulling back the curtain, you know, solving the trust issues while also, I mean, I assume speeding up the process of contracts being processed.
Yeah, so if you can take a 14-step process, so one of the things that the consortium, one of the use cases that we are working on with the consortium is the automation of billing for water haulage, wastewater haulage. And right now, a manual process for that is about a 14-step process, and you can turn that into a 2-step process. And so you take all of the dispute, all of the delay, take all of the contract leakage out of the process and just automate the whole thing. It completely changes how people think about everything.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is kind of at the same time, you know, you're heavy into oil and gas, but you're also kind of a player in the greater Houston innovation ecosystem. And I know you've had some, you know, relationships with different startup development organizations, but you've kind of been with the Canon now for a while. So I just wonder how the ecosystem has been for you working with these different organizations.
Yeah, it's an interesting story because, you know, coming from an executive in multinational drilling equipment manufacturers, I didn't know anything about the entrepreneurial infrastructure within Houston at all. So joined Station back when they were in Midtown, and then the whole mentoring network, getting introductions to banks, getting introductions to lawyers, getting introductions to, I mean, the whole community was absolutely invaluable. I mean, I started out in the meth lab in the backyard of my house. That's a long story about why it's a meth lab, but it actually is. Was at past tense. That's where Data Gumbo was founded. And then we went to join the station, and that was a huge move because it was an expense that we couldn't afford. That turned out to be a great relationship and getting off the ground. But then got spammed by Ben Griffin from the Canon guys and went over there, and they offered us 3 months free rent, and we were actually the first paying customer of the Canon. And they've been an absolute delight to work with, been extremely helpful. They're very startup friendly, and I think that they're doing a fantastic job. So yeah, I think that the entrepreneurial community in Houston, especially after the downturn, has just exploded. Mm-hmm. And it's the companies like the Canon are doing a fantastic job of supporting that.
So, of course, the Canon now has grown exponentially in their space available. And you've grown right with it, because I know now you've diversified. You're not just in oil and gas, and you have actually some really exciting new industry that you're in. So tell me a little bit about that, those opportunities, and how they came about, and how now you're kind of have multi levels of business.
Yeah, so we received investment from Equinor Technology Ventures and Saudi Aramco Energy Ventures in May, which gave us capital to be able to build out the development team. I think you know we have an office in Stavanger as well. So that was, you know, that was the, you know, the catalyst to us to be able to not only support the opportunities within those two companies, but also the consortium, and then really to once you start getting momentum, you start to have a... We have some very strange conversations about different people wanting to do different things with blockchain. Mm-hmm. So we've had organic bug farms from people in Amsterdam. We've had salmon farmers in Norway. But we were approached by Michael Matthews, who we've hired recently, has been in the news for EPC contracts. So the ability to streamline all the expense, the financing expense for the construction industry is phenomenal, because a huge portion of the, I think it's a $9 trillion market, mm-hmm. and something like 30% of that is financing costs. So if we can automate the payments and remove all that need for those financing costs, you've added a significant value to the industry. So we're really excited about getting into that. And then obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but if you follow the supply chain for oil and gas, all of a sudden you find yourself in the shipping business, you find yourself in the helicopter business, you find yourself in the aircraft business. So it's really a matter of following the supply chain of a massive industry, and you end up doing, you know, in lots of different segments. So it's a balancing act of focus and making sure that you've got an industry focus, and you have to have domain knowledge. I mean, if you don't have domain knowledge, you're not going to get in the door of these companies. And so balancing that requirement to have domain knowledge and understand the value that you can add to the industry with the demand to grow is a challenge.
Yeah. We covered the expansion into the construction industry, and I just remember thinking, wow, he went from oil and gas, which is obviously, you know, slow to adopt, maybe not as tech optimized industry, to another not, but I guess that's like the challenge, you know, you're providing these solutions for these problems that, you know, people have been having in their supply chain for years and years and years, if not decades.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, the oil and gas industry is famous for being incredibly slow, glacial, I think was what some people would describe it. But the financial impact is undeniable. If you can save $8 million on a contract for drilling wells for a rig in a year, all of a sudden you've got people's interest. So it is the financial benefit that comes from being able to automate these contracts, which is driving the adoption. So you're right, they are slow industries, but they're pretty quick to act if they see the real returns that are possible.
Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you, you mentioned a little bit about your fundraising, and I know you've done a couple rounds. So tell me a little bit about what it is like raising capital, first of all, in Houston, but maybe also even the oil and gas industry.
Tough. Some of us used to joke when we were in the station about how difficult it is just to get somebody's attention, and how difficult it is to get any credibility, and how do you work through the volume of you know, different startups? How do you differentiate yourself? So I'd say it's very tough, especially because we kind of bridge the software and industry gap. Mm-hmm. So, you know, are we an energy play, or are we a software play? You know, what are we? To answer that question, I'll say we're a software play with an energy industry focus. So enterprise software. And then the, you know, the different VC companies in town, some of them don't like software as a service. Some of them don't like energy. Some of them like big chunks of steel that go in the ground. That's what Houston's used to. So finding somebody who got the belief and got it early. So the guys at Equinor, I mean, they really believed in what we were trying to do at a very early stage, and then went through the whole due diligence. So we had to prove that the business case multiple times. And then you have to go through, you know, the due diligence process of a multinational. Saudi Aramco came into the game and sped things up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But all the time you're a startup, you know, starving, and you're looking at a brick wall. In fact, we were talking about this morning. It's like driving a sports car at 100 miles an hour or more. You know, get your foot flat on the gas towards a brick wall, which is you're running out of money, and you have to keep the foot on the gas because you have to be able to close contracts and you have to be able to hire people to be able to satisfy those contracts. So your burn rate goes up. I will say that we were extremely fortunate in being able to find some people who helped us figure out how to do convertible notes. And then after we did a convertible note, we did a safe, security agreement for future equity. So we actually raised about $3.3 million with local angel investors and companies like Plug and Play, who helped us bridge that gap from funder financing to enterprise financing. So that was, I think that the Houston community as a whole really stepped up, and it wasn't the there's often a question about, you know, which angel networks did we use. We talked to a lot of them, and we actually didn't use any of the angel networks to raise money. We did. The Canon guys helped us out a lot. Mm-hmm. There was a funding night. We had a two-minute pitch, and we got a lot of funding from that two-minute pitch, believe it or not. Wow. So I would say that the angel network, the unofficial angel network within the Houston community, is very, very strong. And I actually can't thank them enough, because it enabled us to bridge the gap between, like I said, our own money and then, you know, the more professional money.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously I hear the challenges of startups every single day. It's basically my job at this point. And I think it's really interesting for me. And I wonder from your side of things, because I know, you know, you're one of, Data Gumbo is one of the companies that I think as being kind of making it. You know, you've overcome so many obstacles, like raising money and educating your industry. So I guess my question is basically, has it gotten better? Have you seen, you know, the city, you know, different entities within Houston kind of providing a positive effect on the city's innovation ecosystem?
Yeah, I have to believe it has. I mean, back, this is 2015-16, there was Station, and they were a startup themselves. They would fit in this room themselves. I mean, there was, I don't know, 30, 40 of us in the room. And that was really the only startup kind of incubator, if you like. It's, incubator is the wrong word, but that existed in the city. Now, I mean, like you said, Canon is growing exponentially. You've got the whole the Houston Exponential thing in the medical center, but not medical center, but down there. And you got WeWork, and you got all these other communities that have sprung up since then. So I think that the downturn in Houston from the drilling and oil and gas business was a terrible thing on people's lives. But the positive side effect of that is that now you've got all these entrepreneurs coming up with new ideas and starting these amazing startups. I mean, there are so many startups in Houston now, and the infrastructure to support them, like the Canon, like Station, has really blossomed and has enabled that growth to happen. So it's changed night and day from what it was, you know, in 2016. That's a short time.
Yeah. So I know I've covered Data Gumbo News very recently with the kind of expansion into the construction industry. So no pressure, but what's next?
Well, we were invested in by this little company called Saudi Arabia, Saudi Aramco. So mm-hmm. I think you stay tuned and see what happens in the Middle East, not just the Saudi, but I mean, if you're over there, then there's multiple other opportunities. And then if you follow multinational oil and gas companies, you end up in all kinds of strange places. Mm-hmm. So I would expect that we would have, if you ask me this time next year, we will probably have two, maybe three more offices in different places around the world. We've got a, we're talking about the slow oil and gas business, but we've been looking at our forecast for the next quarter, two quarters, mm-hmm. and it is, it's stunning. It's which is a good thing, which has got its own challenges, right? So there's going to be more growth. We're going to be raising more money, and we're going to be branching into adjacent industries and being very selective on, you know, how we grow. So the whole thing for us is building this blockchain network of interconnected companies, and that the more companies there are part of that network, the more value the network has. So building that network out as fast as we can. Also working with legal companies, because the more we understand about smart contracts and how to write those, then we're starting to get a lot of interest from the legal community, understanding, you know, how do you write a legal contract that can be enforced by a smart contract. So I'm waffling a little bit, but so I'd say geographic growth and adjacent industries, as well as understanding the contracts for the industries we're already in. So really kind of grow the beachhead we've got within the oil and gas industry and try and be able to show customers the value of blockchain across the hydrocarbon supply chain, because one of the challenges and opportunities is that these multinationals tend to have different divisions, one for upstream, one for downstream, one for midstream. And being able to show using a blockchain across these different divisions and different parts of their supply chain, you can get a much better visibility into the spend for an organization. The other thing is just the innovation in blockchain. I mean, where is blockchain going? It's once you really get your head around it, then this becomes massive opportunities and new functionality that you can bring to market, which we are doing. So long story to a short question.
Yeah, no, I think it's very interesting to see kind of where your mind goes for expansion, because it does seem like there's endless opportunity.
And that's the challenge, right? Yeah. you've got to be able to focus and deliver at the same time as chase the opportunity.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you also have a lot of travel coming up as you expand. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk about this. It's exciting to see kind of how far you've come and where you're going.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. It's been fun.
That's it for today's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review if you enjoyed this podcast, and tune in next week for the next episode. In the meantime, for all your Houston innovation news, check out innovationmap.com.